Continuing with our occasional series on the end of life and the gift of teaching. Back in September, we brought you the story of first-year medical students at the University of Maryland in Baltimore, their first day in the Gross Anatomy Lab, their first day dissecting a human body.
Oh, sweet. Look at that.
Can you see that?
That is crazy.
Wow.
Oh, man, look at that.
That is so cool that you can actually see the spinal column.
We went back 2 months later and talked with some of the students about how their thinking and learning had evolved and about whether they might consider becoming body donors.
I felt like I should now. I should pay back. I should give this to somebody else. And I had a funny thought, which was that I should get a tattoo for all those first-year med students and put something really funny on it, you know.
Don't cut here.
Be kind. I don't know. I would think about doing it now. It's a wild thought.
Today, we'll meet some people for whom donating their body to science is not a wild thought, it's a reality. And we start with Rhonda Disbro. She's 40, a hairstylist. She lives in Catonsville, Maryland, outside of Baltimore. The week before we visited, she had mailed in the one-page form that authorizes the Anatomy Board of Maryland to use her body for medical education and research.
Once I got down to that bottom line, I was like, okay, let me get this thing signed and get it in the mail and I can quit thinking about it.
Now she has a copy of the paperwork in a folder marked Arrangements. Rhonda Disbro took a lesson from her older brother, who died unexpectedly and had made no arrangements, and from her mother, who did plan ahead to donate her body.
Seeing these things happening around me made me think I'll rest better if I know that I'm not going to leave people not knowing what to do. The grief is hard enough to get through without having extra confusion and decision making.
When your mother decided to become a donor, do you remember talking about it with her at the time?
Well, yeah, she mentioned it. She thought about it, arranged it, and presented the concept to the family. And actually, at the risk of having a little dark humor, I was actually kind of relieved because she had asked me to do her hair when she passed away previously to that. And how do you say no to somebody like when they ask you something like that? So in a sense, I was relieved because I don't know how I would handle having to do my mother's hair after she had died.
If there were to be a funeral.
Yes. So somewhere between the time that she asked me that favor and the time that she passed away, she had made this decision. And I feel that the whole family received it very well.
When you're talking to friends, or maybe people who don't seem to understand why you made the decision you did, what do you say to them?
Well, I've had some people who are more conservative and traditional who question it strongly from, I think, a religious standpoint. And my answer to that is that I believe in God. I consider myself a Christian. And I did look into whether or not this was a sinful act, so to speak, or anti-Christian, so to speak. And I come up with no information that suggests scripturally that there's anything wrong with it. And thinking that the contribution could actually help modern medicine and medical research makes me feel really good. Once my spirit is out of this vessel, if it can help, they can use it.
And the uses are many. The Maryland Anatomy Board receives about 1,500 donor bodies a year. 300 or so will end up at medical schools for anatomical dissection. As for the rest, paramedics may use them to practice intubation, gynecologists may train on laparoscopic hysterectomies, orthopedists work on hip or knee replacements, researchers may study the brain of an Alzheimer's patient. There have been scandals. UCLA suspended its willed body program last year after the director of the program was arrested on suspicion of trafficking in body parts. Tulane University was sued after it transferred bodies to a middleman who then sold them to the Army for landmine experiments. Not good news for people like Ron Wade. He oversees the body donation program for the state of Maryland. Ron Wade grew up in a funeral home, worked as a medic in the Air Force, and has a kind of gallows humor about his job. When our engineer has a coughing fit, Wade is quick with a proposal.
Fumes.
I'll get a donor form.
One or the other.
We got two witnesses. Did we take a head count?
But seriously, Wade says the majority of those who donate their bodies are women. Most have families and at least a high school education. Many don't have a strong family tradition of a classic funeral and are happy to save that expense. And above all, Wade says, the donors want to promote learning.
For the most part, these people are looking at very commonsensical things and something that has impact. This is the legacy they can leave behind for the next generation. Because 2 weeks after you're gone, they'll go, who? We're not all that important. But that's one way of being important.
What would happen if a family member might say, I know this is what my mother or my father wanted to do, but I'm opposed to it. I don't want it.
Well, my emphasis would be on their health and well-being, and I would tell them to do what's best for them because they're the ones going to have to live with the death and cope the rest of their life. So, you know, they should do what would bring them peace of mind.
Has that happened?
It happens on occasion. Once in a while we may have someone die and donate it, and I may have this little widow call me up every week wanting to know what's the status with George. And you kind of know that she's not really handling this real well. And I may suggest that she talk to the minister and all of that, and or maybe even think about having something done because it was playing in their mind. And in some cases, when I see that the need is that imperative, I might be able to expedite the medical use on their behalf. Or in a few cases when that really wasn't possible, I suggested they just go ahead and make an arrangement.
Take the body out of the program, in other words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure, withdraw it out.
There were some stories in the last year or so about bodies being used for military experiments, testing explosives, things like that. Do people ask you about that? Does that kind of thing have an impact on what you do?
As soon as that hit the news, I'd been dealing with that. You know, those are issues that breach the public trust. As far as, you know, impact studies and military studies, landmine testing and all that, to me it's a very valid. I'm a veteran. It's a very valid thing. For years, I have thought that there are plenty of people who would donate their bodies for automotive testing. I know people who have lost family and relatives and friends in car accidents and children. And if using my body could save the life of a child through an impact study, to me, that would be worth it if it would save one life of a child. But that has to be put up front. That's part of the informed consent and decision-making process.
In Ridgefield, Connecticut, at his home overlooking a lake, Jan Stribula pulls out his body donation form.
I, Jan Stribula, being of age 18 or over and sound mind, residing at my address in Ridgefield, hereby donate my body to...
Jan Stribula is 56, a civil engineer. His wife, Mary, is 58, a social worker at a hospital. Jan tells us he's thought about donating his body for years, got even more interested after he read the book Stiff by Mary Roach, subtitled The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. Jan has decided to donate his body to the New York City Hospital where he was born.
It's funny how I feel like this really does give me a completing the circle somehow, like going back to the same place. It just seems like a nice trip.
You like that idea?
Yes, I do. And I had mentioned this plan to Mary, and she thought she might do it too. It sounded like something we could do together.
Mary, what about that? You haven't signed up yet, right?
No, I haven't signed up. I do have the application.
And what's your thought process at this point?
Well, I think it's actually a little bit connected to the fact that my mother died last year of Lewy body's dementia. And when I had gone to conferences about Lewy body's dementia, what was indicated is you don't really know what type of dementia a person has until after they're dead and you can look at the person's brain. And it really made me understand that there really are things that our body can do after we've died that could be very helpful to people. And unfortunately, with my mother, I learned about this really only about 5 or 6 months before she died. So I didn't really get a chance to kind of have her do that, which I think she would have liked, because there is something about when I think you're suffering with something and you can't do anything about it in your life. I thought you would have had a good feeling doing something about it afterwards. So I think it's connected a little bit to her in a way, and it also connects me to Jan in a special way. So I think those two things are kind of compelling for me.
Jan, have you thought through, or did you ask the people at the hospital exactly what would happen, how they'd be using your body?
They told me that it would be used by medical students in an anatomy class. They thought that would be the likely use, although you never know. Any use at all would be something of use, and that's the appeal. The real appeal of the whole body donor thing is to let somebody gain something out of this, and I'm really not too concerned about who that is.
Mary, what about you? In the course of doing these stories, we've spent some time in the anatomy lab, and it's a very intimate thing. They know every part of the people, the bodies that are on the tables in front of them. Does that go through your mind at all, or is that just not part of
it? I think it's going through my mind more now that you're raising it here, which is probably a good thing. I don't know if I'd really thought about it, sort of like being naked in front of a person who's really going to get to know all the parts of my body. That does seem odd. I think I am glad I won't be here to witness it when you say that. I don't think that would make me not do it, but you are right. It does make it seem, I feel a little more squeamish about it when you say that.
This all raises such interesting questions about how we think about ourselves and our bodies and our death and our own mortality.
I think there is something I feel differently about being in my 50s where I feel closer to that side, you know. But I'm not exactly sure what I believe. You know, I consider myself an agnostic. And I do think of us as having a spiritual component as human beings. And I do kind of wonder, does that die with the body as well, or does it have a life afterwards? So I don't see myself as just a body. I do think there's definitely a spiritual component. And I'm going to tell my spirit it should not come back to the lab if that's where I am.
Mary and Jan Strivula at their home in Connecticut. In June, the medical students from the University of Maryland, where we started this series, will take part in a memorial service to honor the people whose bodies they worked on. We'll be there to talk with the students and with family members of the donors. You can hear our earlier stories at npr.org.